commission's just trying to deal with the law and try to understand what the law is. And there has been a practice of doing this, and it's built into the cap. And so if we're going to be asking, the committee's going to be giving input on the cap, I think, you know, at least from my standpoint, I think we need to be talking about, is that really something we need to be doing? And Craig can speak to this as well, but I mean, Wayne said, not everybody uses an income basis for valuation. Totally agree with that. But in those cases where it is, how's the commission going to know? And the commission will have just double counted those sales.
No.
If you're going to value a property based on the revenue stream that was derived from that byproduct, and you're going to turn around and not count or count those sales against the exemption, that sure seems like double counting to me. How's that not double counting in the situation where there's income-based valuation? And I don't think it's this commission's job to know whether there was income-based valuation. That's fundamentally part of the statute. They should never be peeking over the fence to think about, you know, valuation issues. And because of that, should we really have a policy and an equation that builds in something that looks a lot like adjusting the way the property is valued rather than just thinking about the principle of pollution control, keeping a waste from going into a landfill?
As one that was on, that served on the advisory committee that came up with the cap and this provision, I want to talk about why it's there. I want to not necessarily defend it against a particular change, because what you're, you know, some of what you're saying, I thoroughly understand. But I think the cap, and including that provision, is an attempt to implement 1131G3, which directs the executive director to allow for determinations that distinguish the proportion of property that's used to control, monitor, prevent, or reduce pollution from the proportion of property that is used to produce goods or services. It was an attempt by the committee, the advisory committee, to come up with a way that we all looked at and said we can agree and live with. Not necessarily that any of us thought was ideal, that would allow these guys to expeditiously, you know, have a way to determine of this property that's serving two purposes, a productive purpose and a pollution control purpose, what proportion is each. And so I offer that, and the reason I say this is to say that if there's a way to improve the cap that improves that principle, I would like to work to do that. You know, I'm not here to defend the existing cap and all and byproduct stuff and say, you know, but I do know why it's there, and I think it's there for an important reason. And so if we can advance the principle of giving them something they can administer and that separates, comes up with something, and it has to, you know, there has to be some numbers involved, you know, and values involved, because we're trying to separate what is the value of the property for pollution control purposes, what's the property for production, and we wound up in that second go-round in 2001, realizing we had property where there wasn't a physical separation between those uses. Yeah, I mean, it was, the classic example, again, goes back to the, instead of putting a filter on top of a smokestack, we don't even have a smokestack because we have an electric burner. You know, and so, how do we do that? I'm all for us finding ways to improve on that.
And I think that leads us, you know, to the next step. Does the cap fit everything? I don't think it does. I think that, you know, every situation dictates itself, just like in your Part B of the list. I think as you move through that, you know, there are two items that have been, I guess, applications that have been submitted, and the rest of them have not. We don't even know where that's going to go until somebody actually builds one of these things or generates it, and how you determine what's pollution control property, prevention property versus production property. We don't know at this time. So I don't want to limit the unknown. The cap does work in some instances, but not everywhere. Trying to fit everything into that formula
don't necessarily agree, but I will make it a charge to come up with and tweak the tier three cap.
I have been through the cap equation. And I kind of like the thing. First off, I thought it was horrible, then I got in and dug in and did a calculation. Now, does it fit absolutely every case? Probably not. But I think it fits lots of cases, and I would hate to get rid of it, because I think it does a good job in lots of cases.
And the legislation that was passed told TCEQ to try to come up with a method that they can pretty much apply in all cases, but they want to standardize things.
Don't think it up as you go along, have equal and uniform application here of.
But that doesn't mean that.
Bedrock principle of tax policy, right?
Does that mean that you couldn't have an applicant come and say, hey, I've got a different way to calculate it because this is a unique piece of equipment?
Yeah,
I guess staff's concern with that is once we start to say this is a unique piece of equipment, then we're not fulfilling our obligation to apply every application, to process every application in a uniform manner. Uh-huh.
But in effect, aren't you doing that anyway? You've got tier one that's not quite uniform with tier three. So by its nature, you would have some difference.
And I guess we were looking at it that having tier one and tier two and tier three was in fact a uniform process, right?
If tier one, that's right. If tier one is those things that are no-brainer exemptions, right? That shows up on the door, you know how and the use, you know that use is, there's no reason to go through a lot of thinking about it, you've seen it 100 times before, or 2 times before. I think that's the purpose of tier one, is why should y'all spend a lot of time and charge someone a bigger fee to do the full analysis when you can see it and move it and go on?
Well, in tier one and tier two are 100% pollution control. And then you get to the others, which are part production. So that, I mean, there's a difference between those and how they're treated in the act.
I understand the logic. And I'm just trying to reconcile it with the revised G1.
Can you describe
uniformly to all applications for determinations under this section?
The options that you presented to us. So really, option one is just taking your current cost analysis procedure and introducing this marketable product value idea to it. Okay. I don't quite understand option two.
I can rule by that.
Let me mention this before he gets started. Even though I certainly don't know what's in the minds of the authors of this bill, so I don't pretend to know that. But I almost had the feeling that they wrote this bill that said you shall use the methods and standards that are in your rules and apply those to all applications. I almost think they meant that we didn't need to change our rules, that we should apply the cap to everything. And that my feeling for that comes from the LBB report that was actually the basis for the rules that basically said that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's a fair comment, minor, to look at the legislative history, both the LBB efficiency report and then the LBB fiscal note, right, and see that there was something in mind there. The House Committee report talks about consistency, which would not contradict that, but I don't necessarily think it drives home. I mean, we can sit here and argue over that pen all day long. I think it is not a mischaracterization to say that there are certain folks within the legislative process that probably were thinking about the cap. There were plenty of other folks that were thinking consistency across the board, because if we're going to say cap, we should have put it in the statute. Everybody knew what we were talking about.
Appropriately so.
Yeah, and I'm not contradicting you. I think it kind of goes down to what Don's earlier comment. Maybe if we come up with a cap, you know, that we all can support, we don't have the debate.
I have a question. How many people here have gone through that calculation on something? 3, 4, 5, 6?
These guys.
Yeah.
All of them. Actually, each of them 400.
One of the unique things with the cap was it cut the number of 50 applications that are of what we've seen before. People don't use it. They don't like to use it.
It scares people because it looks awful until you get into it.
It looks very difficult, but it's not once you get into it.
Right.
In fact, we've got a spreadsheet here to plug your numbers in and calculate it.
Yeah.
I remember when we worked on it, I came away when we all first kind of devised it, and we're working on it back in that last group we did. I first was all confused and scared of it, and then there was some point that I said, oh, that's simple. I don't even have to understand that. That's simple and it works. And the big thing was, at the time, between everyone around the table seemed to think it worked. Like, not that you need to now. I mean,
I guess like you requested in the last meeting, you want us to go over what we are thinking. And what we are going through with is just what we discussed. We have been going through and we are thinking about it. And we will like your comment or a different equation and all that. So what we are doing here is I'm going to go over with you what we have right now. And the basis for this one, like we have been talking, is H2, 3206. And 3544, which the bills amended is starting to require that the standards and methods established in the rules apply uniformly to all applications for determination, including applications that are listed in section 11.31, that is that part B. So in order to address the intent of 3206, that's why we're going through all this. And HB 3544, staff developed the draft concept of the marketable product, which will include anything sold as a product, accumulated for later use, or used as a raw material in manufacturing process. Therefore, the following partial use determination options were developed using marketable product. So all the options that we was based on marketable product. All the variables are the same. From one equation to another, it doesn't change. It's the same variable, but in a different form. In this one, what we do here was we have a production factor, which will account for equalizing if you are comparing to production units. Include capital cost new, that means that the pollution control equipment in capital cost new, minus capital cost old, in this way, you can use this one in two places. My capital cost will maybe the one you are replacing, or maybe a comparable one that if it's a new equipment and you're not replacing, can use the equivalent one that without pollution control aspect. And then the NPV is net present value, marketable product. And that is calculated here. This one here, you calculate by summation of it, and you just take the marketable value, marketable product value minus production cost. And you account for using your interest and the number of useful years of the equipment. That's option one we have. Any question on that?
Yeah.
How do you?
Manual.
Oh, sorry. Oh. Go ahead.
What is the, I think we've asked the same question in different ways last time. What is the practical change from changing from byproduct to marketable product? Which items are you going to exclude or add? What's, is there a purpose? Was there one or two instances or in an industry or a company that you're trying to fix or what's happening?
Well, it's not a company. I think it would be built on 3206 and our experience of the program since the program has been in section. We found out the byproducts kind of limited. We found out that some pollution control equipment have production value on it. They produce a product that can be sold in open market.
Okay.
That's why we expanded this to include all that. Because the purpose of the, remember now, the purpose of the program is to give tax credit to the money spent, which they do not have any economic value from it, income from.
But it seems whether it's a byproduct or a marketable product, you're building the unit for its primary purpose. I'm sorry, I think I'm going back to what Mike was saying. But, okay, I'll let you continue.
But based on the capital cost, there, you know, before there was a lot, like you always planning, to account for income coming in. And that's how that this has been expanded.
I was just wondering how to, because the prices of items that you recycle change, you know, in anything, aluminum cans, whatever, they change so frequently. Sometimes there's a market, sometimes there isn't. How do you figure that out?
Well, that's what we are thinking, and that's why we are looking to you all to give us some information or your own opinion.
Mr. Chairman, I think what Michael was saying, I'm sensitive to it, and that is that you shouldn't punish producers, industries, for byproduct that is profitable to them. And I agree there's got to be an easier way to do this, but at some point, you've also got to admit that if the byproduct or the profitability of this process was so great that it became greater than the cost of having put it in the first place, then we ought to cease the exemption altogether. So it might be a simpler test. You either get the exemption, but you stop getting the exemption altogether when the profitability of it exceeds the environmental cost. And quit doing this percentage stuff and get to, as long as industry is willing to write the exemption off the table altogether in certain cases where the byproduct is actually something they would be doing now, but for the environmental condition.
To me, in the one case I did it, that's what this equation did. The extra cost of the pollution equipment paid for itself in like less than 3 years. So from then on, that extra expenditure was profit, not an expense that company made to reduce pollution. It was pure profit. And that's an investment, and that's what this equation ends up doing is.
I'd like to explore that. It's not that, you know, when we run rough numbers, in that situation it worked. I think I agree with Bennett. If we could come to agreement with an equation that would work like that, that when, you know, really you netted out your expense and you really started profiting for something, you ceased to get the exemption, you know, now, we might be able to talk about
it. The one I did had ended up with a minus 90-something percent pollution control, and the payback was less than 3 years.
Now, I still have the original problem that I stated, which is if we do have income-based valuation, I'm not sure it's appropriate as a matter of policy.
Well, if you have income-based valuation, this entire exemption, I mean,
this part of it.
Well, the entire pollution control exemption deal.
No, how they typically treat that is the percentage of your cost to your cost. The market value, what relates to however they value it, whether they value it on a market analysis, an income analysis, or cost analysis, whatever that percentage of the cost is, let's say it's 10% of the cost is pollution, then they would apply that 10% to the income analysis or the market analysis. So it's ratcheted up and down depending on what it is. It's just a cost. So is it dollar for dollar? No. But it's whatever that ratio is of cost to the market value.
It's also very common for there to be a byproduct when you build a unit, and the market is relatively good.
It goes south.
And then it goes south, real fast. But either way, you're not building that unit for that purpose. I know it complicates things a bit, but
I know what you're saying. Let's say you.
Or the flip side of that.
Let's say he can recover in 3 years, but then let's say the market does go south and there is no viable outlet for a market product. You reapply for your exemption and say zero byproduct recovery, get a different answer. What precludes you from doing that? Supply again. Just say, hey, I want a better answer now that I don't have a market product. There's not a positive this year, maybe one next year or the prior year, but not one this year. Right?
If I come to y'all with a sulfur recovery unit and you're going to value the product, sometimes it's going to have a value, sometimes it won't. How do y'all do that? How do you determine what you're going to put in your product?
I think there was an issue there on. I think can you comment on that one issue we have, the sulfur recovery, when the value went down?
Currently, currently, we process these applications similar to all other permit applications in the agency that we issue is on the date of administrative completeness. Is when we lock in the rules that apply to you, we lock in the whatever the conditions that the market might be, and that's how we process the application in order to cover it.
So whatever the marketability of that product is today, it's complete. So it's...
Whether it helps you or hurts you.
One way.
If we're going to spend a lot of time worrying about 3206 consistency, I think that's a real concern as you think about that. I mean, the guy who files 2 weeks later when the market rebounds has got a fundamentally outcome than the guy who filed before. I understand that this is an effort to endeavor to create consistency, but you know, it's not perfect. This is
it's interesting because we have right now also the way this program works. If you file and get a positive determination, and then according to the rules, maybe even just better understanding by everyone involved, that's not a correct determination. People behind you that file don't get a positive determination. That guy who got it still keeps it. That person who got in early and got a determination gets to keep his positive determination and have an unfair advantage against his competitors who can't get it.
And that goes back to, if you go to 1993 versus 94.
Right.
There you go.
Arbitrary.
No, because the law wasn't passed until 1991.
No, but 94. He's pointing out that
it's the same, doing the same form, fit, or function.
But since you've had polluted crop too, if you applied for a widget in 95, you may get 100%. And 98, they decided that widgets weren't pollution control. So anything after 98 didn't get anything. But the ones that got it in 95 through 97 are at 100% acceptance. Staff has no mechanism to reach back and change it.
And there's going to be some inequity in here.
It speaks to the inequity that we reference with this way, you know, the market changes after you get your application. I'm not defending that. I'd rather see that improved. I'd rather see, you know, an improvement on that. But, you know.
I would say it's wrong anytime. But I hear what you're saying.
I'm not defending it.
Yeah, I mean, and to be fair, 3206 talks about the way you process applications. It's not asking you to make sure everybody's whole backward and forward. But you're saying, are you processing applications that are before you in a consistent fashion? And I can't, you know, I think it would be unfair to speculate that the legislature didn't expect you to evolve the program over time. As long as when you evolved it, you were consistent across applications. This statute doesn't stand for a proposition that you got to figure it out right now and never change it. Nobody's saying that. But
this is a healthy discussion, gentlemen. Shall we let Emmanuel continue?
All right.
This is a handout, by the way. I don't have that.
When we're talking about let me state this, is the same variable, the variable not changed from option one totally the same variable, but we are trying to find a way to make it easier to calculate it. Like some of you were saying, hey, look, this is horrible. We're horrible how to calculate it. We try to make it easy to calculate it different ways. So in this case here, we have annual marketable product. That's minus annual operating cost divided by the capital cost of the comparable. That means for old, the comparable means that if you have the same equipment that do not have pollution control aspect to it, that's what we mean, or the one you are replacing, that you calculate that, you calculate the ratio of that, and then you go and calculate another ratio of the one with pollution control, which we call new, and multiply by that factor F, and then you take the first one, which is PR minus PPRPO. PR is the one with is a pollution production, but it doesn't have pollution aspect of it. And then PRPO is the one is equipment with the pollution control on it. You subtract that from that, and then divide the one with pollution control, multiply by 100, and that will give you the use percentage. So this is the second option that we're looking at. And we are looking forward to get your own feedback or different equation that you all want to use.
Let me, if I may mention one other thing. As long as we're talking about 3206 and 3544, and assuming that's why we're making changes to the rule, they do have applicability requirements in those rules. Those rules, there's a little bit more than this, but basically, or the statute that requires that we use standards and method uniformly only applies to applications after January 1st, 2009.
And our third option so far is what we have now. So right now, that's what we are looking at, the three options. Either we keep what we have now, or you know, select one of those that we have looked at.
And somewhere you wanted to suggest replacing byproduct with marketable product.
Yes.
On those.
So all of them we are looking at have a marketable product as a variable.
And I expressed some concern about that last meeting, in which case I have been educated. No longer hold that concern.
What is it even
about? At last meeting I expressed some question that I didn't understand why we're really doing that. I think I understand it now and I don't have a concern about it.
Okay.
Can you back up to 1 and 2 since you're not allowed to give us a paper copy of what you're thinking about?
You got it.
Yeah,
it's in our options.
Look at the
whole thing. It was the same picture. No, it was when you had it when you got here.
But cost.
I'm sorry. I'm here for you.
This should in no way be interpreted as proposed rule.
Okay.
I guess we need to chew on this, don't we? We've been
I think so. Would it be fair to ask, just open-ended question, what problem are we trying to solve here? Is it the Herzig problem? Is it the byproduct value of steam in heat recovery steam generator? I mean, and I'm not, you guys have to develop consistent standards.
Let me say it this way. That's certainly what the LBB report was about. So I'm thinking, and when I testified at the legislature, that's what they talked about. So you can take what you
that's,
want from
that's what I was asking earlier, just not as direct.
There are issues with our current equation that it's hard to apply to every situation. But
I think that's the best statement, is that you're trying to adjust the current formula to have it more easily or appropriately applied to more situations, if not all situations.
Yeah, that's right.
A lot of these, Mike, if you look at this list, there are a lot that will have similar issues. Biomass co-firing, you know, there's going to be some electricity generated value in addition to maybe you're going to have some reductions and some pollution because you're doing some co-piling. We've got the issue that you and I know well. Let's say one coal plant captures its CO2 and sequesters it, leaves it down there, and another leaves it down there but also recovers oil because it makes the whole project economical. So what should we do in that case? Should the value of the oil produced count against the person who installed it, who may be doing it to meet federal requirements, but they're also doing it to produce oil to make the whole thing economical? I don't know. But it seems like it's not just going to be the steam generators that are going to have this issue.
Oh, yeah, no, I understand that lots of things will fall into this category. If what's driving our, I guess, high prioritization of this issue is something we could figure out a fix. You know, there are certainly byproducts. I mean, the problem is, at some level, the way the solid waste regulations use the term byproduct and co-product fundamentally skews. If you ever thought about issues like that, you couldn't make sense of this equation.
And that's why I think they want to say marketable product, because if you end up with a product that you can't sell, it doesn't count against you. But it's something that you sell.
But we're counting it against us before we even sell it. That's the concern about the equation, right? I mean, that's the nature of this. We're counting it against us based on the presumption that it will be sold.
At the time you file it.
Yeah, the time you file it.
Because that's when they have to make their determination.
Yeah, no, I understand why they do it.
We could reevaluate it every year.
I don't want to do that.
Staff doesn't want us to. We could reevaluate all these exemptions every few years or something.
Okay, I don't want to cut this part of it short.
You might want to.
Anyway, we can think about this a little more, but I did mention that some people might want to, we might have some comments in the public. I want to give them opportunities to talk a few minutes. If anybody does want to talk to us, please feel free.
Can you get the mic?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, members. My name is James Labatt. This is a little unusual because I'm not representing Valero on their application or before the committee, but they asked me to pass along to you the request that if y'all are going to take action on the at the site rule, that they be allowed to submit written comment first. They were called away to a different meeting and asked me to, if y'all were going to take it up, to remind you of their request, and that's kind of just a personal favor that they asked me.
Okay.
That concludes my comments.
Would you go ahead and ask them to send it to us so we have it?
Yeah.
Now we take it up?
We're going to take it up.
You taking it up today?
No.
No, but we need it tomorrow for our next meeting.
Yeah. Yeah. So tell them to go ahead and get it to us. We want it, right?
Yeah. I think, didn't they just get their first look at it today? Yeah. I assume they did.
Yeah. Near perfection means it should take a
while. I'll sure pass that along. Thank you for your indulgence. This unusual interruption.
Mr. Chairman, if they are going to submit something, is it could we ask them to have it to you no later than next Wednesday or something like that? By the time you get it and then disseminate it.
Fair. You want next Wednesday, so you have about 10 days or so?
So I don't mind telling everyone. I had some discussions with Mike. He and I are going to work together starting next week to develop something. So if they want us to be aware of their comments as he and I are trying to work on something, then no delay, don't delay. Go ahead and get it to us. Because we'd love to, we don't want to do it in a vacuum.
We have a time limit. We got to have it now if we're going to work on it.
And I have no doubt that we will run your proposal through Tara and Texoga, the other associations.
I would like to get it out to the group, so I want to send it out to everyone if they want to have see it
right.
In advance.
That's a short fuse, but if it's going to happen, if things are going to happen, it needs to happen. We need to have things to have it by the 17th, next Wednesday.
I'm just saying if they would like to make sure we have the benefit of their comments, as we work on it, then that's a very short time frame. If you're the one out of it,
just tell them, just tell them that, right?
I can tell them that. I mean, I represent Texoga, they're a member, I can pass that on, but, okay. Next Wednesday, I suppose that probably wouldn't be a big issue since they pretty much prepared everything anyway.
I'm sure they already pretty close to that.
So, all right. Thanks, James. Anyone else?
Can I ask comments?
Thank you. This is Bernardo Garcia with the Harris County Appraisal District. I made my comments and sentiments and views known on this matter. From a taxing unit and appraisal district point of view, I would like to ask that the committee perhaps think a little bit out of the box, not so much with the partial exemption issue, even the total exemption issue, as to why the exemption has to last, why it has to be granted forever. Once they recoup the cost of putting in the equipment, it continues and continues and continues for on and on and on. Perhaps there should be a sliding scale, sort of like a depreciation. Just throwing that out, that's from our perspective. A second issue, the commission, when they review the applications, the applicant generally says, we think the property's worth X amount of dollars. Harris County and other counties have experienced a lack of forthcoming, a lack of candor, a lack of transparency by a lot of the refineries who refuse to disclose the cost of the equipment, what their cost is to maintain it, and what they're spending to construct those refineries, which makes it very difficult to value. And we have on tape one of the refineries, their tax manager, their expert, and their lawyer were each asked, what do you think this refinery is worth? And each one of them said, we don't know. Their whole basis for what the plant was worth was the drive-by that we did of their plant, but they won't give us any information, and they won't give TCEQ a lot of information. If they're going to ask for an exemption, they need to provide some real information regarding what that refinery costs to build and what they're, how much money they're spending, because otherwise, to good extent, they're probably already getting an exemption by not disclosing what the full value of some of these refineries are. And that's a big concern to the appraisal district. Bear in mind that, you know, that some of the refineries, and not just the refineries, but other companies, when they come in and ask for an exemption and the staff looks at it, grants it, denies it, or whatever, you should also consider the extent of the amount of the exemption, not only in terms of its fiscal impact, but the degree. For example, in the case of Valero, based on 2007 figures, the amount of exemption that they're requesting for the hydrotreaters amounts to over 71% of the value of the plant itself. Okay? And that's a lot of money, folks. Okay.
Can I clarify? You're talking about cost? The cost is 71% versus the value?
Let me put it this way. We don't know.
Okay.
I'm going to tell you what Valero says. We don't know.
Okay.
All they're telling us is that the value that they put on their application with TCEQ, they claim their refinery is worth $248 or $249 million. And out of that amount, 71% is the hydrotreaters themselves. Okay. And that's all we get. So, it would be a good idea that if you're going to allow some of these companies to get these exemptions, they need to tell us what those properties are worth, the real value, and not hide behind the log on a lot of these issues. It's great to encourage them to make innovations in the refining process and the manufacturing process. But when they fail to disclose what the true value of those refineries are until they get an exemption, it is a disservice to the community and a disservice to the rest of the taxpayers. Like myself, I can't hide my home. You know, I can't get a 71% exemption on my property because I have a septic tank in the back, which is a pollution control device. It's a disservice to the rest of the property owners who share a larger and disproportionate share of the tax burden when you have large industrial conglomerates that are able to not fully disclose the taxable value of their property and get large exemptions that do have a devastating impact tax-wise. I also would like to state, and I've said this before, I've not said it to this panel, but there's been an issue made of that when companies apply for an exemption with TCEQ, the process takes a long time, several years. And as a result, we keep charging them the full amount of taxes, whatever it is that we determine they should pay. And then two or three years later, TCEQ grants the exemption, and guess what? We have to give a refund. And that is devastating to the jurisdictions, absolutely devastating. There's been some issue that, well, the taxes were paid under protest. And folks, you can pay your taxes under protest, but when you call the fire department, we don't send them out there under protest. When you send your kids to be educated at the local school, we don't educate them under protest. And when your house is, you need the road repairs and sewer repairs and everything else that the jurisdictions have to do to provide infrastructure, we don't do that under protest either. We just have to do it. And there's a lot of companies that take up a lot of that in resources. And it's disingenuous for them to say, oh, we paid that under protest. Give us our money back. A lot of the jurisdictions right now, because of the current economic climate, are going to have a difficult time trying to refund a lot of that money. The schools have discovered that that if some of these refineries get these sorts of exemptions, the state is not going to cover the shortfall. We have what you've seen happening in Kansas City schools, shutting down entire elementary schools because they can't afford it. You're going to see the same thing in some of our communities that are going to be affected by this. So I'm asking the advisory committee to look at a bigger picture of this and to correct some of these problems. And just to summarize, failure to disclose the value of the refineries, failure of TCEQ itself to render a timely decision such that the economic impact of a refund is devastating, and also requiring the applicants to share their information, especially when they're asking for an exemption. And finally, why does it have to be 100% exemption? When you look at the partial exemption, you're breaking down the piece of equipment and deciding what portion of it may be entitled to. You know, in the case of the hydrotreaters, they build them 1 year, give them 100% exemption. After that, slide it down until they get to recoup their cost. But why give it for 100 years? You follow what I'm saying? You know, but that's just, I'm just throwing that out.
Hydrotreaters are 0% exemption.
Exactly, I agree. I agree. But, you know, they're going to cut the baby, you know, give me my half of the baby. Boy, that's worth it. In any event, thank you. That's all the comments I have.
I appreciate your comment. If I could, and we have one in the back, and before John speaks, I'll just say, with the exception of the speed of the processing of the applications, unfortunately, I think most of what you said is outside the purview of this committee. You might have some real issues, but I think it's outside of our purview.
I don't think that's right. You only get in that sort of time frames if you've got appeals and, you know, those are exceptional situations.
Well, I disagree with that. I understand that Valero was an exceptional situation because of the appeal. But when you have abatements or exemptions that are applied for in March, I am not casting stone at TCEQ or their staff. I think they've done a great job. I personally think they totally understand. But when they have, you've got, what, two people basically handling all the applications across the state of Texas? I don't know, three? You can double it, and I still don't see how y'all can do that. But the problem is, it's real. When the application comes in February, and it's not approved until September or October, by that time, it's gone through the process. They put me on notice that they've got an exemption, but I can't flag it for the inches because it's not an exempt use property. But when it does come through in October, budgets are set, tax rates are set. And we've been fortunate that I think the largest one we've had may be $20 million. That's not enough to really upset any apple cart. But if I had a $200 million exemption that came that late, it could hurt some school districts, some cities.
Well, and that probably is something that is statutorily controlled, but that sounds like, I would hope we could, if we have an issue there on timing and just need to change a cutoff date, that might be something we could work on, I would think.
You might have a cutoff date, so it doesn't apply to that year, it applies to the next year.
Well, that's what happens, it applies to the next year, but the equipment has already been in place. Well, it should be approved by...
It's not, you don't go back to 94, do you, and say,
no,
no. It's just for the time you applied.
No, you got an application on file.
The problem is, it's a one-year skip.
It's a one-year deal. So if you had some sort of deadline for when
there's
you had to apply...
There's nothing to prevent you from applying really early. Got to fix some of
that. Well, I know getting the tax roll set and...
It depends on...
Tax
reps don't always have all the information in a timely fashion. In an ideal world, everything would get filed on January 2nd. They'd act on it by April 30th and be done.
And a refinery would never have to disclose their full value to you guys. What they would need to disclose is the cost of the equipment there.
That's correct. No question.
They're trying to get an exemption for.
Yeah. So you're according to the rendition laws, they're supposed to disclose it's improvement to real property. The appraisal district can demand that real property be rendered like personal property, where they give the value. But there's a lot of problems with some companies doing it.
Yeah, but I mean, in terms of TCQ's role.
No, there's nothing to do with them.
Yeah.
If you do not verify the estimated value,
the clause, you don't. Yeah. We hear from John. If you'll introduce yourself for the record.
Sure.
I hesitate to do this because I'm not sure I can articulate the thoughts thoroughly enough to convey them to you, but I feel compelled to comment, as I did when the commission adopted this rule and we supported the adoption and wrote a letter there too.
Excuse me, John. I'm thinking you introduced yourself.
I'm sorry, John Kennedy with the Texas Taxpayers and Research Association. We were one of the principal proponents of this amendment when it passed the legislature and worked with Don and a number of others in guiding it through the legislative process and have been involved in the process ever since then. And I'm always troubled, as I was at the commission hearing, when I hear enter the discussion the revenue considerations associated with local governments. That is not the job of the TCEQ. The TCEQ's job, as mandated by the statute, is to determine whether there is pollution control taking place that's resulting from this machinery. If it costs 10 bucks or 10 trillion bucks, it doesn't matter. It's not taxable. The purpose of the statute and the constitutional amendment that was adopted by the public, overwhelmingly I might add, was to say that if you're required to make a capital investment in order to comply with a rule or regulation that causes you to reduce pollution, we're not going to charge you a property tax on that capital investment. And why do they get it every year? You tax it every year. It doesn't get taxed just once. It goes on the tax roll and it continues to be taxed. The purpose of the legislation, as I said, was to say you don't have to pay a property tax on that. This was all done, as you remember, Don, when the Clean Air Act came along, and there was a lot of investment going to have to be made, large capital investment, to comply with the federal regulations. And the decision of the legislature and the people of Texas was that those folks who had to make those additional capital investments for the purpose of reducing pollution to get in compliance did not have to pay property taxes on that investment. Doesn't matter what that investment is worth. Little or a lot, you don't pay taxes on it, period. That's why it's exempt. And the commission's job is to determine whether there's a pollution control activity going on. irrespective of the cost involved. And that's specifically delineated in the statute, which is why it was given the CEQ to do that determination, and why appraisal districts have no option except to accept the determination of the commission, because it's supposed to be made on a scientific basis, irrespective of property tax implications one way or the other. My memory serves, Don, when we talked about increasing pollution, we're talking about the production, excuse me, we're talking about the cap process. What we had in mind was, if we required you to purchase cleaner burners in order to reduce less emissions, and you produced 100 kilowatts or 100 units or whatever before with the old burners, and you put the new burners in, and now you were able to produce with the same fuel source and so forth, 110 widgets instead of 100, we counted that 10 against you. We didn't say, if you do this and you produce the same amount of widgets, but if you happen to have a byproduct that you're able to somehow recover and sell in a commercial enterprise, that somehow counts against the capital cost of installing the equipment. It doesn't count against the capital cost of installing the equipment. It has to do with your operations. And remember, this is a property tax exemption. It has to do with the value of the equipment. It doesn't have anything to do, particularly when it's done on a cost, capital replacement basis valuation. It doesn't have to do how much money I make using that equipment. It has to do with whether I use the equipment to reduce pollution and the extent to which it does reduce pollution. But if I happen to create X more units, there's a additional production capacity. So that's counted against me. What I might do with the byproducts or the waste stream or anything else that results from that has nothing to do with the valuation of the equipment.
Thank you, John. Anyone else? I think we've had a quite healthy discussion today. And item 3 on the agenda, I just wanted to reiterate that at the end of this process, it's my intention to communicate to the commissioners the majority opinions and the minority opinions. That's what I wanted to reiterate to you, realizing that we will all come to a consensus or unanimous decision. And with that in mind, I'm kind of moving through this and slow me down if you have anything else to say. But any old business that wasn't discussed?
Mr. Chairman, I just want to ask a question about number 3, because I guess it's my assumption that this committee would, when we are prepared to have a communication to the commission or the agency, that this committee would vote on that communication as it's laid before it.
Fair enough. It was not my intention to say that whatever I say goes. That was not my intention.
I wasn't trying to imply you wouldn't say what this committee was saying, but I was just thinking that I know wordsmithing is
right.
Big.
That's a very
fair. Mike and I have a lot of commonality, but we still have some wordsmithing that we want to get a hold of, like what I presented earlier. And I just,
thanks
so I'm
for
just
the,
trying to get a feel for your process on
thanks
that.
For the clarification. I would like to run it by the committee, at least by email. I don't know if, and we can, if we happen to have a special call meeting after the next meeting, and if we happen to have one, yeah, we can take a vote, or I don't know if we can do it by email, or I'm open to how we do that. But the bottom line is, I don't expect to just send it out without your review and approval.
Fair.
Thanks. All right. Have we had a chance to we did approve the minutes earlier. Excuse me.
Yeah.
I'm beginning to get weary here. any other general comments? I think we future meeting we've already decided is going to be
the 26th at 10 a.m. I don't know if we get the same room or do we need to work on it?
We'll post it. We'll post it on the site.
Okay. Okay. All right, by the way, as far as location, what's your thoughts about this meeting room if we have it available?
I like this better than the first one.
Yeah, I'll say that.
If it's a kind of work full time, it's availability issue.
Okay, all right, good. Any other comments before we sleep on this for a while? And
if somebody has anything else, I move we adjourn.
Second. All right. We are adjourned until March 26th.
Yeah, our second decision.
And you're sitting next to him.
Get over there.